This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
I mean, Cash Patel, baby, he got in, confirmed by the United States Senate. Look at that. Look at that. That means it's a clean sweep for President Trump and his nominees. But they are terrified of what Cash Patel is going to uncover now. I think the Epstein list is coming out. I think a whole lot of people are going to be very, very afraid. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Great to have you with us today. Yesterday, of course, we were at the White House for our media row, which Caroline Levitt actually mentioned at the opening of her press conference today, which was really, really cool. And so this is kind of funny. I did the radio row yesterday and got on a train in New York because I had a couple Fox News hits today. I get off the train at Penn Station after the train was delayed for, I don't know, 2.5 hours or something, because maybe there was a car on the track, some nonsense. I don't even know what they were saying. But anyway, Amtrak was delayed. And I get out of the train. I'm walking to the hotel, and Caroline Levitt texts me and says, "Hey, are you still in D.C.?" And I said, "I just left, but what's up?" And she said, "Oh, I wanted you to come and sit in that new media seat that they have at the White House press briefing." And I said, "Oh, man." And I said, "Well, maybe she goes, "Don't worry about it." She says, "We'll just do it another time." So it's great. I love seeing you on Fox. We'll just do it another time. But I was so touched and honored by that, that not only did I get to go to the media row, but then I got to invited like literally the next day to come back to do the White House press briefing. So it's great. Very, very cool. And they were just wonderful to all of us yesterday, treated us great. And I think the guests were compelling. I think the interviews were really impactful. Doug Burgum, I'm telling you, man, Doug Burgum, my man, we had a great time together. We were hanging out, talking about eating rattlesnakes together after the interview. But that he's a smart dude. And we got into energy in Pennsylvania and liquid natural gas. And as the Secretary of the Interior and the chairman of the new energy council that the president has, he's going to have so much ability to bring energy dominance. It's not just about energy independence. It's about American energy dominance to the world stage. And I think that's really great news. So there's that. But I am in New York now today. I'm taping something later today. It's a super secret, double secret probation kind of a thing that I can't talk about. The only hint I'll give you is you should tune into Fox News Saturday night. And I have some weird backdrop I got to get rid of. He said, "Look at that! It's like an island backdrop." If you can see on the YouTube, let me fix my video settings here and get rid of that. That's kind of cool. It looks like I'm on a beach. You guys see that? Look at that! It looks like I'm in the water.
I think you should leave it. I like it.
Do you like it? Well, now I'm wondering if there's other background videos I can use.
I think you should change it like maybe once every 30 minutes. Just keep the audience on their toes.
So the reason why I'm a little behind here is because Emily Campagna was filling in for Jimmy Fallon. And Emily took forever to get out of the studio, but it's okay. She's a sweetheart. So how about that? Golden Gate Bridge behind me. No, we don't like that.
I don't like that one. No? I like the Hawaiian vacation you were on a second ago.
I have a green screen one. I could pick that one. All right.
The one you switched to a second ago, you had the Fox News in the background, but then you also had the Golden Gate Bridge on your chest. Your shirt got picked up as green screen, I guess. I like that one. If you can somehow get that to happen again, I vote for it. Ooh,
In the grass. The grass. Look at this. And this is cool because now, look, I'm disappearing. I have no arms. Look at me, swirling through. Everybody who's not on the YouTube chat's going, what the hell is he talking about? What's wrong with him? All right, I'm going to leave up the Island Beach theme for a little bit. Let's do that. All right? Feel like we're on vacation?
I like that one.
Little mental vacation? Why not? You know? Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Look at the way the palm trees swaying in the background, too. So Kash Patel is now the FBI director. He got confirmed by the U.S. Senate. This is a big, big deal. People are freaking out today. Snagglepuss himself came out and said that there's evil that's going to happen in the Department of Justice. Yes, that's right. So we got that audio for you. And White House press conference today, the president's going to speak in a little bit from the White House. He's doing a ceremony honoring Black History Month, of course, which is odd because I'm told by the media he's such a racist. So I don't know what that's going to be about. Maybe it'll be like Dave Chappelle's character, the guy who was the blind white supremacist who was black. Maybe it'll be like him. Clayton Bigsby. Maybe Clayton Bigsby will be there. I don't really know. And yes, J.D. Vance today saying one of the most important things at CPAC about the importance of men being men, masculinity, and don't be afraid, guys, to make jokes with each other and be guys and have fun and do all that stuff. And I appreciated that because my friends, we all bust each other's chops all the time. In my mind, that's a sign of true friendship, when you bust chops. So I always say, if I don't like you, you'll know because I'm probably not taking a shot at you. So if I like you, I'm taking a shot. Like, that's what that snowflake Roger didn't get that day in the YouTube chat. Remember that guy who has since never listened again and never showed up on the YouTube chat again? It's like, you know, I bust chops. If you can't take it, that's fine. I get it. But that's part of being a guy, is busting chops. It's called hanging in a locker room. I have a buddy of mine who used to say that all the time. With people who couldn't handle jokes, he'd say they never spent any time in a locker room. That's true. Now, I never spent any time in a locker room because I have no athletic ability. So obviously, and unfortunately, I lived at a time before men could go in the girls' locker room. Otherwise, I would have hung out a lot there, obviously. But that was a long time ago. So where we are right now as a country is this great conversation we're having about Ukraine and whether or not Donald Trump calling Zelensky a dictator was out of line, and whether or not he should have said Russia is a dictator. And I can tell you that there's a lot of conservative talkers out there, I'm not going to name any names, who are trashing what President Trump said without saying his name, because they don't want to provoke the ire of his base. But here's the thing about the war in Ukraine and Russia that I think people don't really understand. I guess they don't understand. This is not a conflict that is on North American soil. This is a conflict that is on European soil. This is a European conflict. I would be fine if we just stayed completely out of it, rooted for Ukraine, cheered them on, whatever, gave them, you know, held up big foam hands, and that was it. I don't really care what you say about Zelensky or Ukraine. You just do whatever you want to do and knock yourselves out. It's not an American conflict. I keep coming back to this point because I think sometimes simplicity wins here. And the simplicity of the fact is that we, the United States of America, we're not dealing with a war on North American soil, and Europe is not stepping up to deal with this threat. So if Vladimir Putin is the great threat who's going to go through Ukraine, roll into Poland, and take over Europe, Europe's been through this. once or twice, but particularly the last time around. If Europe really feels like this could happen to them, then Europe should be dealing with it. Instead, Europe's buying the guy's natural gas, and they're enriching Vladimir Putin. So I don't really think it matters to say, well, Zelensky's a dictator, but Trump didn't say Putin's a dictator because Zelensky suspended elections in his country because his constitution allows for it. Let me just make this point. I think this is an important point to note. I'm not a particular fan of Franklin Roosevelt's domestic policies. He does deserve a lot of credit, obviously, for his handling of World War II. But his domestic policies were, in my opinion, catastrophic to a constitutional republic. He took Woodrow Wilson's The Beginning of the End of a Constitutional Republic and then just steamrolled it. Powerful executive, the imperial presidency, all of it. But we were in the middle of World War II, and the guy did get reelected twice. And maybe three times. He served four terms. He died in the fourth term, but he might have been reelected, I guess, three times in the middle of a war. I'm just saying the argument that you can't call Zelensky a dictator because his constitution allows him to suspend elections in time of war, that doesn't pass muster for me, considering that we've had, I'll give you another guy. You may have heard of this guy. His name was Abraham Lincoln. He was president in like 1970, I'm not big on dates, but like the 1970s, something, middle of the Civil War, and got reelected in the middle of the Civil War. Did not end elections, did not do these things. So it's kind of, when people say Trump was out of line to call Zelensky a dictator because Ukraine's constitution allows him to suspend elections, and then they also point to the fact that he's so popular according to Ukrainian polls. Well, then why suspend the election? If he's so popular, he would just win again, like Roosevelt won re-election during World War II. But this excuse of saying, well, because Russia attacked Ukraine, therefore they can't have elections, but we're supposed to believe that we're fighting for democracy here and that the United States has to be on the side of democracy. As far as I'm concerned, they're two corrupt countries. And I don't really think there's much difference between either of these guys, to be honest with you. If I'm in power and I'm the president of Ukraine, and I have an excuse to not have to run for re-election because there's a war, I'm going to take that excuse. And in the United States of America, if we had that clause in the Constitution, we're always at war. I mean, we're at war right now, right? We're at the war on terror right now. I guess you could use that argument, too. So I have a tough time with that whole let's defend Zelensky from Trump's comments because he chose to suspend elections because his Constitution gives him the authority to do so. I don't know. And then they turn around, they go, and he's also super popular in his country. Well, then therefore, he probably would have won. So then why suspend the elections? But beyond all that, he doesn't know where all the money went. He said that. I don't know where all the money went. And all I know is it's my money. And it's going there to this conflict. Joe Biden would say, as long as it takes. What does that mean, as long as it takes? At some point, there has to be an end to this thing. There has to be a resolution here. And this notion now that if you are not on the side of Ukraine, quote unquote, winning, even though that means you're going back to pre-2014 Crimea, that you're somehow on the side of Russia, that's also just absolutely absurd. It's absurd. I want to read you a tweet from J.D. Vance today. I thought it was very well said by the vice president. Unfortunately, we live in a world, a day and age of, we don't have a lot of people who take the time to think about history. So they fly off the handle with things and they make comments and they say things that are stupid because they don't take the time to actually sit back, think about what they're saying, go through it in their head and try to understand the historical perspective of it. And for some reason, I'm having a little bit of trouble here getting on the internet here at Fox News. But I don't know if I mentioned I'm at Fox News. Did I mention that? Did I say that? I think I did, right? Just checking. Why is there so much static in my headphones, Matt DeSantis? Do you know why? Justin, do you know why?
I don't know. It sounds fine.
No?
Well, it's not on our end.
All right. Josh, you know, I'm hearing all kinds of static. Do you know why? Does Jimmy like static in his ears? Is that why? Does Fela prefer static? So it drowns out the voices in his head? Is that what it is? No? I don't know. I don't know what it is. What did Campagna do? Did she mess something up? I'm going to blame Emily. All right. This is what J.D. Vance said today. Somebody put out a quote, and it's a quote from George H.W. Bush from the time that Iraq invaded Kuwait. And if you are a fan of The Big Lebowski, you know this quote quite well, because when The Big Lebowski is in the dude. When the dude is in the grocery store getting his half and half for his White Russians, he's checking out at the counter, and he's there, and the checkout girl, who actually winds up becoming a very, very famous actress later on in life. Anyway, in the background is George H.W. Bush saying, this aggression will not stand. This aggression by Saddam will not stand against Kuwait, right? So it's a very famous scene at the very beginning of The Big Lebowski. Anyway, Niall Ferguson tweeted out that quote without giving it the proper context of The Big Lebowski like I just did. He went with John Meacham's biography, which I don't think is nearly as historically accurate as the representation in The Big Lebowski, but I digress. Here's what J.D. Vance said in response to that. I'm going to share this with you because I think it really sums it up quite well. This is moralistic garbage, which is unfortunately the rhetorical currency of the globalists because they have nothing else to say. For 3 years, President Trump and I have made two simple arguments. First, the war wouldn't have started if President Trump was in office. Second, that neither Europe nor the Biden administration nor the Ukrainians had any pathway to victory. This was true 3 years ago. It was true 2 years ago. It was true last year, and it is true today. And for 3 years, the concerns of people who were obviously right were ignored. What is Niall's actual plan for Ukraine? Another aid package? Is he aware of the reality on the ground, of the numerical advantage of the Russians, of the depleted stock of the Europeans, or their even more depleted industrial base? The vice president continues. He says, instead, he quotes from a book about George H.W. Bush from a different historical period and a different conflict. That's another currency of these people, relevance on irrelevant history. President Trump is dealing with reality, which means dealing with facts. And here are some facts. Number one, while our Western European allies' security has benefited greatly from the generosity of the United States, they pursue domestic policies on migration and censorship that offend the sensibilities of most Americans and defense policies that assume continued over-reliance. Number two, Russians have a massive numerical advantage in manpower and weapons in Ukraine, and that advantage will persist regardless of further Western aid packages. Again, the aid is still currently flowing. Let me just jump in here on that point and say this, too. If you look at the history of all of this with Ukraine, there was a time when former President Joe Biden said over and over again, they're not getting tanks because tanks would mean World War III. They're not getting planes because planes would mean World War III. We were just supposed to give them money, and that was it. But then we ended up giving them tanks. Then we ended up giving them planes, even though those things were all World War III. It still was not enough to defeat the Russians. And so instead, what we did was we gave hundreds of billions of dollars to the defense industrial complex here in the United States of America to make weapons that we would send to Ukraine for Ukraine to use against the Russians. Problem is, there's not enough weapons to use against the Russians. The only way to actually defeat Russia is a full-scale American boots-on-the-ground campaign with our European allies to defeat Russia. The problem with that, of course, is Russia has nuclear weapons. So if you are a realist, you have to just come to these conclusions. See, in 1992 or 91, whenever it was that the dude was in the grocery store and heard President George H.W. Bush say this aggression will not stand. First of all, Iraq did not have nuclear weapons. Saddam Hussein did not possess nuclear weapons, number one. Secondly, there was an international coalition that was then built to push Iraq out of Kuwait. They did not go into Baghdad and kill him. They said our job here was to get Iraq out of Kuwait. They succeeded with that. That was Operation Desert Storm. We all know that. They sang a big song. This conflict can only be resolved because Russia has so much more munitions and manpower than Ukraine does by the United States sending boots on the ground to fight the Russians. The Europeans would have to join us. It would be what is known as World War III. And I know that because that's what Joe Biden said. He said it would be World War III. So we would be fighting World War III, two nuclear powers engaged in what we have always tried to avoid ever since the Cold War, which is fighting with the Russians. I mean, you realize that the entire history since World War II, when we divided Germany And then we began this whole spread of communism and the domino theory and why we were in Vietnam. And then ultimately, President Ronald Reagan deciding that we have to have disarmament treaties and war games, and the Whopper computer deciding that it was better just to play a nice game of chess, right? The movie The Day After coming on, one time they showed it on ABC and it scared the crap out of everybody, and they never showed it again, even though Steve Guttenberg, that was his finest role, in my opinion, besides Police Academy. Police Academy, he was better in Police Academy, but it was less scary than The Day After. Jason Robards was in that movie, too. Bay of Pigs, right? John F. Kennedy, we didn't want to have war with the Soviet Union, so we had a big standoff in the Bay of Pigs, Cuban Missile Crisis. Remember all that? So literally everything we've been trying to do since the end of World War II would be undone by the fact that we would have to go physically on the ground and fight in Ukraine if there's any chance of defeating Russia. And that is World War III. Then the two nuclear powers, plus the other nuclear powers in the room, because now by this time in history, they all have nukes too. Now they're all in the room too. And all it takes is somebody to make a mistake, either the Whopper, the computer from War Games, the Whopper, or someone in a nuclear silo who, I don't think they use people anymore, because you remember the scene in War Games when the one guy wouldn't turn the key? Remember that? This is why they took them out and turned it over to the computer anyway. One mistake, one flip of the red button, and it's the end of the Earth. It's the end of planet Earth. Humanity is over at that point. I don't think people think this stuff through. I guess they don't think through these consequences. And maybe I do because I have a more morbid sense of humor and gallows humor. But that's ultimately what we would be playing chicken with here. You want to beat Ukraine? You want to beat Russia? You want to save Ukraine and so-called democracy from a guy who suspended elections because of a war? You feel that that battle for democracy is so important, even though in our country, war after war, we still had presidential elections. We did it in the Civil War, World War I, World War II. We did it in Vietnam. We've done this. But hey, we're going to fight democracy here for democracy. We're going to go to Ukraine, and we're going to fight a nuclear power. And other nuclear powers are going to be involved. Russia is going to enlist their friends who have nuclear weapons, like China. And let's have fun with that. Or we can try to end this now and avoid all that and avoid undoing everything we've been working towards achieving since the end of the Cold War, which is avoiding nuclear war. Sting even sang a song about it. Sting, If the Russians Love Their Children Too. Do you remember that song? Remember, If the Russians Love Their Children Too, this was if you were of a certain age, you used to go under your desk and hide, prepare nuclear drills. I don't know what the desk was going to do. My theory on that was that you could pull the gum from underneath the desk. Because you remember when you were kids, you like take out your gum, you'd stick it under a desk. And I guess if you know nuclear war is coming, you might as well at that moment peel some gum off, chew it. What the heck, right? Or if you were a certain age in the 80s, you watched a lot of movies about the Russians. Like, for example, remember when they parachuted into the backyard of the school and the Wolverines had to assemble and then they had to go fight the Russians? You know what I'm talking about here. All of that is undone the minute that we have American boots on the ground and we have World War III. So back to the vice president's tweet for a moment here, because I know that this is very important stuff, and it's this. I'll continue. So he said, Russians have a massive numerical advantage in manpower and weapons in Ukraine, and that advantage will persist regardless of further Western aid packages. Again, the aid is currently flowing. Number three, the United States retains substantial leverage over both parties to the conflict. Number four, ending the conflict requires talking to the people involved in it, starting it, and maintaining it. Number five, the conflict has placed and continues to place stress on tools of American statecraft, from military stockpiles to sanctions and so much else. We believe the continued conflict is bad for Russia, bad for Ukraine, and bad for Europe, but most importantly, it is bad for the United States. Given the above facts, we must pursue peace, and we must pursue it now. President Trump ran on this. He won on this, and he is right about this. It is lazy, ahistorical nonsense to attack as appeasement every acknowledgement that America's interests must account for the realities of the conflict. That interest, not moralisms or historical illiteracy, will guide President Trump's policy in the weeks to come, and thank God for that. And if you can name another talk show host who was able to weave so many movie references into a monologue on World War III, good luck with that. 855-839-1210 on X at Rich Zeoli. Big show for you today. A lot of great stuff coming out. Breaking news everywhere. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Cash Patel is in and Mitch McConnell is out. McConnell's not running for re-election. That's fantastic. Look, I'll open the phone lines if you'd like to comment on this Ukraine situation. The number is 855-839-1210. And I'd love to chat. I mean, give me your thoughts. I'm happy to have a conversation about it. I think we have to accept reality here. The reality is the only way to defeat Russia is an all-out ground war conflict with Russia. And I don't want that because it's a nuclear power and it's two nuclear powers who are going to meet in an epic standoff that is going to probably end in the destruction of civilization. It's just the reality. It's not, I live in the world I want to live in, and in the world I live in, not the world I want to live in. And that's the fact. The fact is that in this world, in this reality, Ukraine can't win. And we've been saying that for a long time, right? We've been saying that for a long time. They can't win. And maybe early on when Russia first invaded, had Joe Biden and NATO decided to swoop on in and defend Ukraine, maybe it would have been a different story. But there's two problems with that. Number one, NATO, they're not a NATO country. And I'm not even getting into the whole thing about whether or not NATO or Ukraine or NATO provoked Russia, or I'm not justifying Russia's incursion into Ukraine. I think that that's a pointless conversation to have. I really do. And I see a lot of that on social media. I have no interest in engaging in that. I mean, Russia clearly is the aggressor. I don't think there's any denial in that. It's just, I mean, people are like, well, I mean, they were provoked by Ukraine, or they were provoked by NATO, or they were provoked by the United States. Well, I mean, okay, but they still invaded the country. But that's beside the point. It's we are here now in this present moment of time. And the question is, what do you do about that fact? And we have spent hundreds of billions of dollars and they can't win. And so what happens then when you're dealing with a nuclear country? It's not like this is, you know, like we're not talking about like Chile here or something. This is Russia. This is the former Soviet Union. This is the evil empire that we've been talking about for so long. And I think the misinterpretation that everybody makes is that when Trump comes out and says Zelensky's a dictator, but he doesn't come out and say Putin's a dictator, that he therefore is on the side of Vladimir Putin, I think is just an incorrect reading of the situation. If we are told the battle is a battle for democracy, and the president of that country has suspended his election on two different occasions because the country is at war, I'm not so certain that this is the great battle of democracy that everybody says it is. But even if it is, how does that become my problem here in the United States of America? And this is not an isolationist question. It really isn't, because it's not a matter of a philosophical point in isolationism. It's a philosophical point in getting our asses blown up by nuclear weapons. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as whether or not I believe this is a fight for democracy or not, whether or not I hang a Ukraine flag outside my house or not, whether or not I have a, you know, Putin's the worst bumper sticker on my car, whatever it is. The real legitimate foundational question is, do we want World War III in a potential nuclear exchange with the country we've been trying to avoid nuclear war with since the 1940s? Or 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, even up until right now at this moment? The risk is we're over in Ukraine. Europe's helping us in Ukraine. We're battling Russia and something goes wrong. It's not either that Trump or Putin necessarily want to launch nuclear weapons, but something goes wrong, as it often does in war. And then it's annihilation. It's global annihilation. It's global thermonuclear war, which is not nearly as safe a game to play as chess, as the Whopper taught us in war games. So I don't know what to do. I don't know what the answer is to this situation, other than what we're doing right now isn't working. So then the other part of the problem that I have here is that if this conflict is not an American conflict, if it's a European conflict, why isn't Europe doing everything it possibly can to stop this? And maybe it's because Europe believes two things. It believes, number one, that they can't win without the potential exchange of nuclear weapons. And number two, they just don't think that the threat of Putin rolling into Europe and now crossing NATO, which then automatically triggers the United States involvement, is really going to happen. That this is not a moment where Hitler has invaded Poland or Czechoslovakia and the world has just watched and now it's just going to be, you know, a steamroll over Europe. Isn't it possible Europe doesn't believe that that's the case? Why is it that we have to live in such a black and white world of, if you don't want to keep sending hundreds of billions of dollars to a corrupt country? Ukraine is a corrupt country. You can make this argument that it's a democracy all you want. It's a corrupt country. Russia is a corrupt country. I don't really think that that we're dealing with a situation here where we can ignore that fact. Ukraine is a corrupt country. So if we just keep sending them hundreds of billions of dollars and it doesn't work and it doesn't end and it doesn't achieve peace and this thing drags on for 10 years, what happens then? And if Biden was still president, do you really believe anything would be different other than just sending them money? No. I mean, play hypothetical with me. If Joe Biden had not dropped out of the race and had stayed in the race and won re-election, would anything have changed militarily? No. He just would have kept giving money to the military-industrial complex, and they would have kept sending weapons over to Ukraine. It wasn't like we were actually going to put boots on the ground and fight back on the Ukraine's behalf like we did put boots on the ground in Kuwait. So if you're going to make that historical analogy, the difference is we put boots on the ground in Kuwait. And Iraq surrendered in 8 seconds. Like, they surrendered faster than the French did when the Nazis invaded in World War II. And that was a record. So nothing would change. It'd be another 4 years of us just sending them hundreds of billions of dollars, sending the military contractors in America hundreds of billions of dollars that they send weapons to Ukraine. And this just drags on and on until somebody eventually comes along and says, this has to stop. How do we figure out how to stop this? And if your answer is it has to stop by Ukraine winning, which means that Russia has to retreat pre-Crimea lines now, which is something that Putin has said is a no-go. They're not going to do that. The annexation of Crimea, they are not going to go backwards in that. Well, now you are talking about a long, drawn-out, bloody conflict. Do you want American boys and girls, men and women, their lives spilled in that conflict? And if the answer to that is yes, well, then why isn't Europe sending their sons and daughters to the front lines of this war, since it is on their continent? And then, you know, because we live in the day and age of, you can't have conversations like this, it immediately becomes, you're a Putin apologist. You want Putin to win. You want Russia to win. No, I don't want nuclear war. I don't want World War III. I don't want destruction. I don't want Patrick in 8 years getting drafted to go over and fight in a war that's nothing to do with me. Has literally nothing to do with me. That's my perspective on this. And I think that because of this Russian narrative has persisted with Trump so long, no matter how many times it's been debunked that he's not a Russian asset, he's not Vladimir Putin's stooge, he's not there to do Putin's bidding, that it's so easy then that if he comes along and says this war has to end and it's going to end and Ukraine's not going to get what it wants, but it's going to end, people then turn around and say he's appeasing Russia and letting Russia win because they've said for so many years that he's doing Russia's bidding. No matter how many times that has been debunked. And the counter to that, which I keep saying to you, is, and if it was the fact that he was doing Russia's bidding, why didn't Putin do this in Trump's first term? Why didn't he invade Ukraine when Donald Trump was president? And maybe the answer is because Donald Trump would have said at that moment, we are going to do something to protect Ukraine, or we are going to do something to stop you. I don't know, but they didn't. That much we know. That is a historical fact, that during the 4 years that Trump was president, Russia did not invade Ukraine. They annexed Crimea in 2014 when Barack Obama was president, and then they invaded Ukraine when Joe Biden was president. In the 4 years of Donald Trump's presidency, they didn't do that. I think all these things matter in the course of the conversation, but we live in a dumb time where everybody has to just draw lines and go, oh, well, that means you're pro-Putin. Why does it mean you're pro-Putin? I mean, there were people that did not think the United States should get involved with the Kuwait situation. It didn't mean that they wanted Saddam Hussein to win. They just didn't think it was our fight. But the United States got a coalition of the world together. It took 5 minutes, and we got Iraq out of there. But there was plenty of debate back then about whether or not the United States should get involved in this. You know, this is a battle in the Middle East. We thought it was important that we protected our ally Kuwait. There was a lot of strategic interests. I know that George H.W. Bush said it wasn't about oil. I still think it was about oil. Obviously, I think everybody with a thinking brain knows it was about oil. But we also didn't have to worry about the Iraq army launching nukes. We didn't have to worry about a protracted war. We didn't have to worry about lots and lots of American bloodshed. In fact, it was over in... I mean, my monologue today lasted longer than that war did. Wynn is in Sicklerville. Wynn, hey, you're on Talk Radio 1210. How are you?
Yes, good afternoon. Very, very good show, and you hit all the major points right on its head. One of the things that I had to say is that we actually broke our commitment to Ukraine, because when the Soviet Union broke up and Ukraine separated from Russia, we guaranteed that if Ukraine gave up their nuclear weapons, gave them back to Russia, that we would protect Ukraine from Russia. That was a commitment that we made.
Who's we?
The United States. United States.
How did we, the United States, make that commitment?
We made the commitment because...
No, I'm not asking why. I'm asking how did we make that commitment?
We made a commitment telling Ukraine that if they turned over those nuclear weapons back to Russia...
So you're telling me then that we signed a treaty with Ukraine that was ratified by two-thirds of the United States Senate that we would defend Ukraine?
No.
No?
No. No, you're right.
So then how did we make a commitment?
We, the President of the United States...
Correct. Bill Clinton made a commitment. Yes. Bill Clinton's not president anymore. We did not ratify a treaty. This is the problem when we go outside the United States Constitution. If Bill Clinton had proposed a treaty to the Senate where we would provide protection to Ukraine and the Senate had ratified it by two-thirds, then you'd be entirely correct. You would be 100% correct to say we, the United States, made a commitment to protect Ukraine, but we did not. The president at the time did. Presidents don't have that kind of authority, and even if they do, that only lasts as long as their presidency lasts, because it only lasts as long as their commander in chief. It doesn't last in ad infinitum. The next president can undo what a president does. It's no different than an executive order. It's no different than the Paris Climate Accords. It's no different from any other agreement a president enters into. If it's not confirmed, ratified by the United States Senate, it's not binding by the United States of America. That's the difference between the NATO treaty, the Treaty of Versailles, and the actual treaties that matter.
I don't disagree. That's why I made the phone call. You're hitting it right on the head. You know, you got the facts. I did also want to say that Iraq did have weapons of mass destruction. They had chemical weapons, and chemical weapons are considered weapons of mass destruction. So, you know,
But they're not nukes, though. You know, I mean, we didn't have to worry about them.
I don't disagree with you on that. I'm really enjoying the show.
Well,
it's a
thank
really
you, my
good
friend.
Show, and you're like, I'm retired military, and I graduated the Army War College, and you're hitting the nail right on the head on all the points that you're making. So,
well, God bless you for your service. Can I ask you what you did in the military?
I did ordnance, and I did logistics, and I did 39 years and 4 months at my mandatory retirement. So I also graduated the Army War College 2002.
That's great. Thank you, buddy. So, thank you for your service, Wynn. Hey, I appreciate it.
You're very knowledgeable. Very, very, very knowledgeable. So I'm going to continue listening to your class here.
All right, buddy. You have a great day. Thank you. I try to do my homework before I, you know, run my mouth. Some days I'm not always successful in that fact, but that's the big story of the hour, though, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, VanariA, VanariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Let Dr. Mike be your guy to give you that beautiful smile you deserve. Tomorrow, getting my foot surgery, so I will be off the air tomorrow, but back on the air Monday. And as I mentioned to you, I am in New York today. I did America's Newsroom this morning, even though I spoke for about 38 seconds because I was bumped for the vice president. It happens. But it was true story. Caroline Leavitt texted me last night and asked me if I could come to the White House press briefing to sit in that special chair that they reserved for the new media chair, which was such a cool invitation. And she genuinely meant it when she said, no, do Fox. We'll come back to the White House. We'll do that another time. So that was great. I appreciated that very much. All right. More to come. 855-839-1210. If you want to weigh in on your thoughts on the Ukraine conflict, look, have the conversation with me. I mean, I'm open to it. Absolutely. We have a ton of audio. I'll play everything that's said. My goal here is to avoid World War III, and I think too many of the people that are angry at the president today for believing that he's somehow appeasing Russia are making completely incorrect historical analogies, and it's not appeasement at this point. 855-839-1210, coming right back.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Can you play that liner one more time?
Yeah.
Go ahead. That was really cool.
Hey, guys. It's Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, and you're listening to The Rich Zeoli Show.
Look at her. That's cool. That's cool. Hey, somebody said I could get a background in Zoom that looks like the Oval Office. Can I ask you an honest question, though? Just a really basic question to my executive producer, Matt DeSantis, associate producer, Justin Otero. Why is it that at all this time we've never just made a digital WPHT background? I've spent all this money on, like, background banners and, you know what I'm saying? Like, why?
I don't have an answer for
that. It just seems to me like that would have been the easiest thing to do.
Seems like it would be cost effective, yeah.
I'm waving at Christine DeSantis. She's Guy Benson's producer. I love her. My buddy.
DeSantis? Any relation?
Yeah, DeSantis. No relation to you. She's the greater DeSantis. You're the lesser DeSantis.
There's a lot of DeSantis's running around nowadays.
Everybody's running around DeSantis these days.
Popular.
I met Emily Campagno, and for the first time. Not hard on the eyes, by the way. But just for the record. So, anyway. Where was I going with this? Hang on. I just got a tweet from somebody. I just got a text from somebody. You're terrific. I love seeing you. Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. Who's that from? Dana Perino. Okay, great. Where were
Wait,
we?
Who was it?
That was Dana Perino.
Dana Perino. How do I know that name?
She hosts the America's Newsroom show with Bill Hemmer, and I was on there today for all of about 38 seconds.
But, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's so, right.
It was fun, but... You know, at some point, this will become annoying. I don't know when. It's probably already annoying.
Wasn't she White House press secretary, too?
You know, it's funny you say that. She was White House press secretary, yes.
All the press secretaries love Rich Zeoli.
All the blonde press secretaries, which is apparently. I don't know. Kaylee, though, I haven't heard from her in a while. We used to be text buddies, but now not so much. So what amazed me, though, about being at the White House yesterday was that we... had all these really important, very important people coming through, great conversations. But was Doug Burgum not the coolest guy to talk to, Matt?
Oh, by far.
By far.
Never ask for photos with anyone, ever. Not at the RNC, not at the DN. Like, I don't do it. I don't care. Yeah. I did make an exception. When Doug was hanging out after the interview, I had to get a photo with the guy. He was so cool.
Yeah, he was so cool. And we talked about the rattlesnake thing, and he just, and then he walked, and then we took pictures with him. He's BSing, and he comes back later as I'm on the air, and he had left his little bottle of water on the desk in front of me, and he walks over, and I stop talking. I go, "Hey, Mr. Secretary." He goes, "I forgot my water," and then just picks it up and walks away. It's like, well, don't forget your water. So you can see why I thought the man could be president. He's got the personality. I called that one wrong, but he's got the personality.
He could great presidential hair, too.
And he's got the hair.
Disappoint.
No, the hair in person, even more radiant and magnanimous than you could ever imagine. So, and one day when they make the movie about him, we'll call it Landman, Matthew McConaughey can play him. Am I right? Is he not a dead ringer for McConaughey?
That is true. They have some, I don't know if they look similar, but they do have the same hairstyle.
Yeah. Well, they got that kind of same look. Let's see. Philly Talk wants to know, does Caroline Levitt know that 50,000 of your listeners voted for Trump because they wanted you to be the press secretary, even for just a little while? That's very funny. Johnny Cook says you left out the best, Dr. Strangelove. When was the last time you watched it? It should be required viewing for everyone at least once a month. I'm serious. Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Love the Bomb. Yeah, that's a great movie. I have not watched that in a while. Speaking of movies, big Bond news, big James Bond news I'm going to share with you today, which ties in, of course, to Fort Knox and the president saying he's going to audit Fort Knox. Plus, Larry Krasner's running for a third term. No surprise there. But this time around, he's pulling an Alvin Bragg. And God willing, the radio gods are on our side. It may be the triumphant return of the love gov, Andrew Cuomo.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.